You know, I was wondering, you know, if she could keep on, because the force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like it makes me feel like that.
My name is Rip Van Wagner from the lovely village of Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA, Catskill and More, 90.7 FM.
I'm Ro in Anchor, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will hear interviews by WGXC's Randall Martin with Columbia County Republican Party Chair Greg Fingar and Columbia County Democrat Committee Chair Sam Hodge. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news and Jason Martin's song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Turn out or tune in to two of the world's greatest percussionists performing in Catskill at the Avalon Lounge on October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Composers and percussionists Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt perform with a live web stream at WGXC.org. Turn out or tune in for Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Sunday, October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Mary Dempsey reports for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson Common Council has approved a new 4-year contract with the Civil Service Employees Association that runs from 2022 to 2025, which includes a $1,500 signing bonus for each union employee. The previous contract expired on December 31st, 2021. The Common Council unanimously approved the pact at its September 20th meeting. Quote, "We were in negotiations for 4 months," unquote, Mayor Kamal Johnson said. Quote, "It was an easy contract to go through and everything worked out fine. The CSEA members make up the bulk of city employees," unquote. Union members will receive a retroactive 2.5% pay raise for 2022, effective January 1st, a 3.25% increase in 2023, a 3% raise in 2024, and a 2.5% increase in 2025. The retroactive increases will be paid for by the contingency fund the city set up, as well as money from the municipal fund balance. This is the first contract to include a signing bonus in the past 15 years. Council President Thomas DiPietro said, quote, "It's more of a retention bonus. We've had a significant number of people leaving," unquote. Under the agreement, city employees who opt out of the municipal health insurance plan will get an increase from $3,500 to $5,000. Quote, "The increase is in line with the increase in the cost of our health insurance plan," unquote, DiPietro said. They, the employees who opt out, are saving the city a lot of money, he said. The agreement also makes changes in the holidays the city acknowledges, adding Juneteenth, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the day after Thanksgiving, and removing Lincoln's birthday. Quote, "I like to think we are a pro-union city and we value our city employees," unquote, DiPietro said. Note, DiPietro is a WGXC volunteer on-air host. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Luis Ferrer Sarduni and Nicholas Fandos report in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul has extended her lead over Republican challenger Lee Zeldin from 14 points in August to 17 points in a new poll from Siena College released on September 28th. Voting begins October 29th, so that is a steep hill for Zeldin, with only 77% of Republicans saying they would vote for him, down from 84% in August. Zeldin has a slight lead upstate, but trails by a large margin in New York City and a smaller margin in the city's suburbs. Hochul, a Democrat, outspent Zeldin $7 million to $1 million on television ads in September, although conservative cosmetics heir Lawrence S. Loren has added more than $3 million into a pair of pro-Zeldin super PACs recently. The poll also found the other Democrats running statewide, Senator Chuck Schumer, Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, and Attorney General Letitia James, with large leads over the Republican opponents in their races. Read more about this story in the New York Times.
Diane Pinero Zucker is reporting for the Daily Freeman that Saugerties Town Judge Claudia Andreasian has agreed to resign midterm, effective September 30th, following a more than two-year investigation by the New York State Commission on Judicial Conduct. According to a press release from the commission, at various times over the past 2 years, Andreasian was told the commission was investigating, quote, a total of 6 complaints against her, among other things, unquote. The commission was especially concerned about Andreasen's allegedly, quote, adversarial relationship, unquote, with town police. She was also accused of being, quote, discourteous toward, unquote, and making, quote, disrespectful comments about court staff and courtroom spectators, unquote, according to the release. The commission said Andreasen also, quote, attempted to effectuate certain staffing decisions without involving her co-judge or the town board, unquote, violated various prohibitions on campaign activity by judges, unquote, and, quote, failed to maintain professional competence in the law, unquote. Andreasen, a Democrat, agreed to resign and never seek or accept judicial office at any time in the future, according to a September 2nd agreement. The agreement was signed by Andreasen, her attorney Deborah A. Scalise, and the commission's administrator. Asked to comment on Andreasen's apparent adversarial relationship with police, Saugerties Police Chief Joseph Sinagra said in an email, quote, "My only comment in this matter is that the documents provided speak for themselves," unquote. Andreasen is a former Ulster County probation officer, but not an attorney. She served as town judge since she was appointed in 2012. Her current term would have expired on December 31st, 2024. In a written statement, Andreasen said, quote, "I was tired of trying to do the job that I was elected to do and having to deal with the constant interference and intrusion by the town's executive, legislative bodies, and appointees, all of whom were attempting to undermine the independence of the judiciary. I no longer have the energy to correct inaccuracies. I just want peace," unquote. In a statement, Robert H. Tembekjian, commission administrator, said, quote, "The multiple complaints against Judge Andreasen were serious, and her permanent departure from the bench was appropriate," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Trisha R. Doxing is reporting in the Daily Freeman that Democrat Pat Ryan and Republican Colin Schmidt outlined their differences on the abortion issue at an Ulster County Regional Chamber of Commerce Meet the Candidates breakfast September 27th. The two are competing for the new 18th congressional district seat in November. Ryan, the former Ulster County executive, was just elected to be the 19th congressional district congressperson for a few weeks, filling in after Antonio Delgado resigned to become lieutenant governor. Schmidt is a two-term Republican assemblyperson from Orange County. Ryan was dismayed about the Supreme Court overturning the Roe v. Wade decision earlier this year. Ryan said, and I quote, "I feel pretty strongly this goes squarely against who we are as a country, who we are as a nation," end quote. Then Schmidt said he is pro-life, so in favor of banning abortion, and then falsely claimed that Ryan would permit taxpayer-funded abortion up to the moment of birth and would prohibit parental notification laws. Instead, Ryan said he would reinstate the framework that Roe v. Wade created and call Schmidt's mischaracterization, and I quote, "kind of embarrassing, frankly," end quote. The full video of Schmidt and Ryan speaking at the event are on the WGXC Newsroom website. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
On social media on September 28th, the town of Cairo announced public hearings about overriding the tax levy limit and changing the cannabis law. On October 3rd, the Green County Town holds a public hearing at 7 p.m. at the town hall to propose a new local law to override the tax levy limit. Also that night, there will be a public hearing to amend Local Law 4 to allow retail cannabis dispensaries in Cairo. Last December, the Cairo board voted 3-2 not to allow cannabis sales or lounges in the town. Outgoing Supervisor John Coyne and Councilpersons Tim Powers and Mary Jo Cords voted against cannabis sales, and Councilperson Stefan Kralovic and Supervisor-elect Jason Watts voted to allow sales. With the new makeup of the board, Coyne and Kralovic are gone, replaced by Michael Flaherty and Deborah Boggins. The board is only considering retail sales and will not vote to overturn their prohibition against cannabis consumption establishments. A regular meeting of the town board follows the public hearings. The town says it will post an agenda for the meeting just a few hours before it begins.
Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that a portion of a Lexington Road has been named for one of the 17 Greene County residents who died fighting for the United States in the Vietnam War. On September 26th, the Greene County Legislature unanimously passed a resolution to call a portion of County Route 6, also known as Spruceton Road, as Tunis Edward Rapplier Jr. Memorial Drive. In August, the Lexington Town Board voted for a similar resolution. Rapplier and his family resided on the new memorial section of the road between Grant Gully Road and Shoemaker Road. The official name of County Route 6, or Spruceton Road, will not change, but signs will honor the 1964 graduate of Hunter Tannersville Central School along the route. Rapplier was 21 years old on November 22, 1967, when he was killed in Binh Thuan Province, Vietnam. And you can read the full story at Porcupine Soup.
Larry Rollison is reporting for the Times Union that the Port of Albany is saying no to $29.5 million in federal funding for the construction of a $350 million wind turbine tower manufacturing facility on the Hudson River. Walking away from the award will speed up the permitting process after falling behind schedule. The grant was allocated to the Port of Albany by the U.S. Department of Transportation and has been in jeopardy since the summer, when the port clear-cut more than 80 acres of waterfront land in the town of Bethlehem without federal permits. In early 2022, a group of more than 20 Glenmont residents sued the port and the town of Bethlehem for clearing 80 acres of land on the Hudson River for the project, allegedly without providing proper notification to local homeowners. At its monthly meeting on September 28th, Port officials said they were withdrawing the grant application with the DOT, thereby allowing the project to move forward more quickly, which must be completed by the end of next year. It is unclear how the port will replace the funding, which was supposed to pay for infrastructure at the Hudson River site, known as Beacon Island. The port bought Beacon Island several years ago in anticipation of constructing the facility, which is being built for Equinor and its equipment manufacturing partners Marmon and Welcon. The Norwegian energy company Equinor is building several wind farms off the coast of Long Island. Port officials said by dropping the grant request, the DOT's Maritime Administration will no longer hold back the federal permitting process that will now be led by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Read more about this story at timesunion.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. And we start each renewable weather forecast off with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. Right now, $3.54 a gallon is the lowest price, according to the Gas Buddy website. That's at the Citgo in South Cairo. Then the air quality forecast is at 22, the same as on Wednesday. The UV index is just ever so slightly worse than the day before. It's a 5, which is still in the moderate range. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Thursday should be mostly sunny, good for the local solar panels, with a high of 58 and a north wind 7 to 10 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Thursday night, the prediction is for clear skies with a low around 38 and a north wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm after midnight. Friday should be sunny with a high of 61 and a low around 43. And Saturday, there's a 20% chance of showers after 2 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high of 62 and a low around 47. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. On Thursday, September 29th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. it's time for the jazz show Situation Fluxus with Cheryl Kay. And today, she is speaking with Canadian composer, cellist, curator, writer, and media founder, publicist Nick Storing, and Portugal native cellist Marina Hasselberg. Then at 11 a.m., it's time for Transformational Listening, featuring artist Tahil El-Zabar today. All mixed up at noon after the local news has works from Spike Jones, Anton Fear, and Courtney Barnett. Then it's Last Call on What's the Frequency Kenneth at 2 p.m., and they're playing Mind Games on Turn on the News at 3 p.m. That Travis is the featured artist at 3:30 p.m. on the Radia Show. And then on the Echolocation Show, Liz LaJudas is Ringing Rocks on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The archetypal student-teacher romance gets turned on its head in the U.S. premiere of Hannah Moskowitz's Sexual Misconduct of the Middle Classes at the Catskills Bridge Street Theater, October 13th through 23rd. The new play was the winner of the 2021 Canadian Governor General's Literary Award for English Language Drama, and it's showing Thursdays through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles. And if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, September 29th. It is a really rough morning for some. Our fellow East Coasters are waking up to the devastation from Ian, and if you are from New York, you likely have an aunt or an uncle in Florida. So, even if you don't, it is time for us to step up and show them what we got. Head on over to www.volunteerflorida.org. And that is where they are coordinating efforts for people to donate their labor or money. Again, that is www.volunteerflorida.org. All right, bringing the focus back local, we see early morning temperatures range from 43 in Lexington to 50 in Catskill. Regional average soil temperature is 59 degrees. Today will be cool to comfortable depending on how much sun you get. A high of 62 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to, 37 degrees. That is a frost warning range, folks. So everybody with any sort of sensitive plants outside, be sure to bring them in. Tomorrow, it bounces back up to 63 degrees, and then we will see 45 degrees overnight. Saturday morning, chances for rain enter the area and will get stronger in the afternoon. A high of 62 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, rain continues and we see a low of 49. Sunday morning, rain comes to an end and we see a high of 61 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:08 a.m., high tide at 5:27 a.m., low tide again at 12:11 p.m., and high tide once again at 5:55 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 65 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 6:29 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see geomagnetic storm watches are up for tomorrow, with expectations for coronal mass ejection and solar wind stream to cause issues. Solar wind speed is currently 484 kilometers per second at 11.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently slightly improved, with fair conditions below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 72. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Daniel Rue of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support. Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Oh, I feel so bad. stop the motion. If you get the notion, you can't stop the groove, cause you just won't move. Got my sunroof down, got my diamond in the back. Put on your shaggy ring of woman if you thought I
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. This week, we've been talking about registering to vote as we approach state deadlines to register before the 2022 midterms. September 26, parts of a sketchy Arizona voter registration law were preliminarily stopped in a likely victory for voters, but it's also a reminder for all voters to check their registration status with their local election office. Arizona Senate Bill 1260 has provisions which allow election officials to cancel and remove a registered voter from receiving a mail ballot without contacting the voter if they only suspect that John Smith is registered elsewhere. Around the country, partisan state officials have used the voter rolls as a voter suppression tool in recent years, such as Georgia in the run-up to the 2020 election. In the Arizona case, the U.S. District Court judge said in a preliminary ruling that the provision which allowed for cancellation and removal of a registered voter from the mail ballot list without a personal follow-up was unconstitutionally vague, could disenfranchise voters, and would likely violate the National Voting Rights Act, another section of the bill making it a felony to send voter registration materials out of state, was also cited as unconstitutionally vague. With legislatures making it more difficult to vote around the U.S., now is a great time to check your voter registration status and take action if there's a problem. We have a link to Vote.org's registration check tool on AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We lose so many people after a storm because they wander about. They drive into flooded roads. Power lines might be down.
The National Hurricane Center's acting director, Jamie Rumb, encouraged anyone in the path of Hurricane Ian to remain in place until conditions are safe. The Category 4 storm made landfall in Florida, causing massive storm surge, winds, and flooding. Governor Ron DeSantis cautioned full restoration work will likely take weeks.
This is going to be a rough stretch. We're here to respond to the areas that are affected once the storm has passed.
More than 2.5 million people were ordered to evacuate ahead of the hurricane. The U.S. is offering assistance in the investigation of explosions and leaks at the Nord Stream pipelines under the Baltic Sea. State Department spokesman Ned Price said it's believed to be an act of sabotage.
We're basing it primarily on the conversations that we've had with our European partners. They, of course, are much closer to the site of this apparent sabotage.
Russia moved to annex four partially occupied provinces in Ukraine by releasing vote tallies of support, but there are reports of residents being forced to mark ballots at gunpoint. Meanwhile, the U.S. is sending an additional $1.1 billion to Ukraine for the manufacturing of new weapons. The funding comes as the Senate debates an additional $12 billion in a continuing resolution. Ohio Republican Rob Portman applauded the vote.
The actions of this body and the House of Representatives and the administration in providing this help to Ukraine has allowed for successes that were unimaginable 7 months ago when Russia initiated this latest invasion.
A new poll finds more than half of voters say it should be more difficult for Congress and for states to override presidential election results. A Senate committee advanced a bipartisan bill to rewrite presidential certification law. The Politico Morning Consult poll also showed a drop in President Biden's approval rating and a bump for Republicans on a generic congressional ballot. At the White House's first conference on hunger, nutrition, and health since 1969, the president vowed to end hunger in America by 2030. Senator Cory Booker argued the nation also needs to improve health by moving away from processed foods.
Almost one out of every $5 we spend as Americans is being spent to treat diseases and disorders that are entirely preventable because we have a food system that is doing the wrong things.
Policy changes proposed include expanding SNAP eligibility, expanding free school meals, and making the expanded child tax credit permanent. The Georgia State Elections Board asked the FBI to assist in a criminal investigation into a voting system breach in Coffee County. Security camera footage recently made public depicts former election officials permitting individuals unauthorized access to equipment. Officials say similar conduct was uncovered in Michigan and Nevada, where pro-Trump operatives are accused of gaining access to voting systems. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Fidery Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
WGXC's Randall Martin spoke earlier this week with Columbia County Republican Party Chair Greg Fingar and Columbia County Democratic Committee Chair Sam Hodge, previewing this fall's elections.
Next is going to be an interview that I had with Greg Fingar, chairman of the Columbia County Republican Party. He didn't have much time today, but we'll have him back on. But we had a great discussion, and we'll
join
this is Randall Martin
right
on your Tuesday afternoon radio show. And today we're going to talk a bit about politics. And I was able to get a hold of a good friend here in Columbia County, Greg Fingar, and he is the chairman of the Columbia County Republican Party. Is that the correct title, right?
Yes.
Okay. And one of the things I want to be able to prove is that, you know, even though my leanings are Democrat, that Democrats and Republicans can still have a civilized conversation. What do you think, Greg?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's election season coming up, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of national issues and local issues. What do you think about the sort of political rancor that's going back and forth? Why can't people find common ground?
Well, I think in Columbia County, which is what I'm much more involved in, we absolutely do find common ground.
Okay.
I think we work together well. I have worked well with my Democratic friends, supervisors, and my Republican friends, supervisors, and countywide elections. That's what I focus 99.9% of my time on. And quite frankly, I'm not seeing in Columbia County at all what we see and hear in the media that happens nationally down in Washington, D.C.
Okay. For me, it is, you know, when you start to move into the questions and political conversations, not even intentionally, just because you're having conversations and they head that way, there is substantial disagreement on what we would consider sort of fundamental issues. You know, like the there's so many, but let's just start with the most recent thing. The Supreme Court's decision on women's rights to choose, Roe versus Wade being impacted by that. What are your feelings? And again, that's a national issue. That's not decided on local but it certainly has local impacts.
Well, if you're asking me personally, I believe in a woman's right to choose to do whatever she wants to do as long as it's within the law. And New York State has had and enforced laws pertaining to, if you're talking about abortion, New York State has laws pertaining to that.
Yes.
And I support those laws.
Well, now,
honestly, I don't know them verbatim, but I absolutely do support them.
Now, and wonderful. But does that, now you being the chair, does that put you in a particular position of the national stance of the many in the Republican Party is not that. It is very much a curtailing of women's rights to choose. Do you have to choose between sort of what your own beliefs are and what the Republican Party says is sort of their talking points and sort of national stance?
Absolutely not. I focus my efforts on local politics, and if we're going to get into national and talking about possibly congressional races, I believe I support what our congressional candidate Mark Molinaro supports, which is pretty much as I've just outlined.
Right, and I know that. I know Mark, and he's a nice guy. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is there's you know, and again, I want to start off for people who don't know you. You do a lot of stuff in the community. You know, you're always an engaged part of supporting many, many good causes. But when we talk about the party, and I was, when I first moved up here, you know, I moved to Greene County, and I actually was registered Republican. I'm a business owner, and mm-hmm. I think that the party nationally has certainly shifted tremendously from some of the initial tenets that one would think that the party was sort of founded on. Matter of fact, it's a much longer conversation about what the party was founded on. But and I know that you've got to go, so I'm trying to get in as much as possible. But it seems to me to be a pressure nationally to kind of believe what the party believes, and part of that is you know, and now the sort of de facto head of your party, Trump. Do you believe that the election was tampered with and it wasn't fair? Do you believe that Biden is not the rightful president, for instance?
No, I don't believe that at all. I believe that the election was legitimate, and Biden's our president, 100%.
And
now,
so,
as far as the party going in different directions, they may do that. But I will say that within our own party in Columbia County, we have people that are left of center. We have people that are right of center. I just try to herd them all in to be a little bit right of center, because I believe that's where the country really resides, just a little bit right of center. Remember, everyone likes lower taxes, less government, mm-hmm. For the most part. Now, my Democratic friends down in Washington have pushed their agenda a little bit further left of center than a lot of my Republican colleagues would like. But to me, these elections, it's like a pendulum. It just swings so far, and then it corrects, and it comes back. And that's the beauty of our democracy. If we go too far to the right, as we may have done in the past, it comes back to the left, and it's too far to the left. And I think that's probably where we are a little bit now. And that's why we have sky-high gas prices. We have people this winter that you and I both know, elder seniors in our own families, that are not going to be able to afford fuel oil. And inflation, it's going a little bit too far left, and it's going to probably correct. And that, again, that is the beauty of our system of government in the United States, and I support it unconditionally, 100%.
Well, I would say that, you know, as a gem, and it's great to hear that. And again, I think that many of the things that we talk about, you know, especially locally, you know, we are in agreement with. But I think, again, in Washington and those politics, it is a very different, it is a very different dynamic. Do mm-hmm. you think? Do you think that the country's at an inflection point where the rhetoric is dangerous? You've been a Republican chairman for a long time. I know you've been involved in politics for a very long time. What are your thoughts about where the country is with this the dynamics? And I understand what you're saying. Like, a lot of this stuff is just secular. You have extremes, and then hopefully you meet in the middle. But I feel like we're at a particularly maybe dangerous point in our federal democracy.
I don't know that I share that theory or that philosophy. I think elections are the root of this country, and we're going to see what happens in November. And I believe that I believe at least in the House there's going to be a correction, and we'll move forward. There's only so much the Republicans can do in the House, because we still have a Senate that's controlled by the Democrats, and the White House is Joe Biden, and he'll probably veto anything that the Republicans try to push through, that he doesn't agree with. And hopefully maybe we will find some middle ground and get inflation and the economy under control a little bit.
I hope so.
A problem. I don't think people, I don't think we're at a point in the country where we're going to see revolts or anything like that. But I tell you, people are on the brink financially with this inflation. And I don't know if many people, and I would encourage people to do this, to look at their retirement accounts or 401ks. I mean, if you've been following this, I know that I've heard comments from the podium at the White House that we don't really follow the stock market too much. It's, I think people should, if they have a retirement, SEPs, 401ks, take a look at your accounts and see what's happened in the last, month or two or the last year. It's really, really horrifying. It really is to me. It's dramatic. People are going to have to work longer, I guess. I don't know.
No, you're right, and I feel the same way. I mean, there's a lot of this hyperinflation is a terrible, terrible thing. But we're not alone in the. This is a worldwide. This is a global phenomenon. I don't know any economy throughout the world that's doing well, and quite frankly, it bewilders me. I mean, I know that there's a lot of talk about supply chains and how companies and countries are recovering from the pandemic, but I don't really understand the bind that we're in, and I know that a traditional tactic is to if people are buying and demand is high, and that causes prices to go higher, and then so raise interest rates. I mean, I get those, those mechanics of economics, but I don't know. You're right. It really does hurt. It hurts everyone, man. But it really hurts those who can least afford to, to weather this financial storm. And so, but it is a global issue. And this also with the war, there's a lot of things that people can worry about. But it's really refreshing, to be able to have, substantive conversations with, and not that that's ever stopped, but what people on the, from the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, because as you said, you work with many people, I work with many people on all across the political spectrum, and, not every discussion needs to be partisan, and not everything is a calamity, but we should work together to find common ground and work always in the best interests of the public.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, I hate to interrupt, but I have to run. As I said, I have a meeting, and that's the people have shown up for that. So I really appreciate the time, and welcome the opportunity to speak with you. And I'll do it again whenever you like.
You got it. Thank you so much, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye. You too. Sam Hodge, the chairman of the Columbia County Democrat Committee. Let me ask you first, can you tell the people who you are for those who don't know you, and just explain a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so my name is Sam, and I'm the chairman of the Columbia County Democratic Party. I've been in that role for about a year. I live in Clawbrook, and it's my job and our committee's job to elect Democrats and to fight for Democratic priorities. And in the times we live in now, it's also our job to fight for our democracy. So needless to say, we've got a lot on our plate, but it's good work. It's fun. We feel like we're doing something. We're creating change, and it's really meaningful.
Well, you know, I mean, what you said was so important about fighting for our democracy. You know, the political sort of typical political issues have really taken a back seat in the fact that we've got many regressive issues, many things going backwards in terms of issues that the Supreme Court has raised, the decisions that they've made, and on women's reproductive rights, and a number of other issues that are likely to come up. Why is the midterm elections so important? A lot of people forget about it, but can you remind people, you know, in the off year that we're not electing a president, why is it so important to be involved and to vote?
Yeah, I mean, voting is the paramount obligation we have as citizens. But, you know, we're in unique times. You know, I'm in my mid-30s, and I have never lived in a political environment like this. We have more partisan rancor than we've ever had before, but it's not about, you know, what the best solution is for Social Security or Medicare or climate change. We're talking about whether or not we should respect and defend our democratic institutions. We have candidates all over this country who are flying under the banner of the Republican Party, and they don't believe in the outcome of our election. Regardless of whether or not they win or lose, they still somehow find a way to attack the legitimacy of, you know, our democracy. So it's a really unique and troubling and concerning time. The midterm elections are who determines or who controls, you know, Congress. So, you know, we may have President Joe Biden, but if we don't have a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, our priorities and our ability to defend our institutions will be compromised. So that's why it's really important to show up now, because all of what we hope for is on the ballot. And we can't trust Republicans in Congress to do the right thing anymore when it comes to protecting our democracy.
Well, as I mentioned, I think that we are looking, as you said, at an unprecedented time where there are issues on the ballot that we thought was settled law. And we have such a disparity of beliefs in between, you know, as you mentioned, what elections were won. There's just no meeting of the minds in many ways, and the political and the past political issues, like, you know, you guys are tax and spend, and you guys are, you know, too liberal with this policy, and you guys are war hawks. This seems to be a completely different kind of rhetoric in America.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've always viewed elections as funneling points for our national mood and also our values. And so, you know, here we are, another funneling point. It's like, you know, you look back just a few months ago and political pundits were writing off the Democratic Party, saying this was going to be a blowout election for Republicans and that it would look more like 2010 or 1994 or even 1980 if you really want to go far back. But then we saw that Supreme Court decision in Dobbs taking away a woman's right to choose, and a host of other really troubling Supreme Court cases, you know, related to the EPA's ability to regulate pollution, gun control laws that have stood for decades in New York overturned. And we're at this inflection point in American history where we have to choose, you know, do we reach for the future and for change and defend our democracy here at home and also be a beacon for the world? Or do we regress? Do we embrace authoritarian ideas about government and, you know, become a democracy in name only? And it sounds really stark to frame it that way, but that's how I feel. And I think a lot of other people are looking at this election and feel the same way. Like, we cannot stay home. We have to speak out, and we have to go to the ballot box and tell people that we're, you know, looking for the future and that we support our democracy. And the best way to do that is by going to the ballot box.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I think that when we when we're having these discussions, this is not just sort of an academic discussion about kind of what we should do and what policies. We're really discussing fundamental issues to democracy and the way that we conduct elections and the way that we accept the results of elections. Do you believe that in the sort of political climate, can people come together and put party over country? Because I totally agree with what you're saying, and it seems that people have picked a side, and regardless of whatever news or sources that they have, I think people are not really looking at the big picture and saying, is the country, is democracy in trouble, and are we headed towards something, you know, that looks very much like an autocracy, or, you know, what you see in many of these strongman governments? How can people really get a sense of the, sort of the larger issues when I think that people are in there, many people listen to news or Facebook feeds or various feeds, and they're in a silo?
Yeah, I ultimately am a political optimist. I do believe that people from different sides of the political spectrum can come together and have agreement, but it takes a lot of work and it takes buy-in from both sides. I originally hail from kind of a rural, suburban-y community on the outskirts of Kansas City, Missouri. And Whoa. So a lot of people, yeah, I know, right? That's just a little bit far away. I always joke that it's Kinderhook, but 200 years younger. So I talk to my high school friends all the time, and most of them are Republicans. Mm-hmm. And we can still have, you know, respectful dialogues, although, you know, we definitely disagreed about who to vote for in 2016 and 2020, to say the least.
Right.
But I felt like we could have a conversation. They were expressing some of the same concerns that I have, that others have, about the strength of our democracy. There are good Republicans out there. There are people who are focused on their families, their jobs. They listen to political news in the background, but it's not at the forefront of their mind. And those people care about our institutions. And so how do we bridge that gap? And that's a challenge for Democrats, and it's a challenge for reasonable-minded Republicans.
But when you have people that, if they don't win, are invariably going to contest the legitimacy of the whole system. And, you know, I've had some experience with the election board. You know, we cover different issues. And, you know, those guys work really hard. And it's a very redundant system between the Republicans and Democrats. So it's a very they do a lot of transparency checks so that everyone is seeing, you know, all the results, and everyone can sort of understand what's going on in real time. But when you just don't believe because someone says it without any proof, without any sort of validity, I'm sorry, I keep getting a notification that I don't know why it won't stop. But when people don't believe in the system anymore, and as we just seen, people don't even believe in federal law enforcement, and, you know, how do you then continue to have these conversations when, you know, there's not sort of a baseline agreement?
Yeah, I kind of call it convenient skepticism. So there seems to be a movement, you know, and it's not unique to folks on the right side of the spectrum, of individuals who, if they don't like a fact, they have to deny it. If they don't like an outcome, they have to assume that there's been some sort of shenanigans. And it's hard to fight that misinformation. It's hard sometimes to prove a negative. They say the election was stolen. You say, well, no, it wasn't. But, you know, they ask you to prove that it isn't, and it's very difficult to engage in a dialogue like that with someone. So I don't know what the solution is except to be persistent and to be positive and to come to the table with your facts. I know when I've talked to some of my Republican friends, some of which, have very different views on what happened in the 2020 election, it's about keeping your cool, being respectful, and kind of what Michelle Obama says. You know, when they go low, you go high. And we just have to be consistent and persistent, and also passionate about the truth. And, you know, I think it will resonate with folks.
Well, I'm going to ask a loaded question since, you know, we cover a lot of urban issues. And one of the things that I think is, are these other issues just surrogate issues for what's on the ballot, with many Americans believing that the population and demographic shift is what's really on the line, and so that they're really willing to vote for the non-facts and someone who represents who they feel their best interest in the long term, even though that may be a fascist system, and even though that they can see, you know, clearly in so many ways that, you know, people are deeply flawed. Is that the real meat of the matter underneath, you know, all the banning of the books and all the, you know, and all the other election denying, all this? Is this a culture war that's occurring kind of right before our eyes?
Yeah, I think we have identity politics are definitely playing an outsized role in this election, and I think just this political moment itself. And, you know, it's we have these political stunts where they're putting people who traveled thousands of miles, risking their life to get to our country, saying that there's a good job waiting for them, putting on them on a plane, and then sending them, you know, to Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard. And that's not productive. And there's something inappropriate behind that that I think is rooted in identity politics and ultimately racism. And so, you know, and I think it's calling it out when we see it. And it's about putting forward candidates that are willing to speak truth to power and talk about, you know, these issues that are counter to our American values. But, you know, I think you've kind of hit it right on the head that we're in this kind of weird moment and unfortunate moment in American history where we're seeing this sort of identity politics being used. I mean, we've got the rise of the Oath Keepers. We have more anti-Semitic attacks taking place, you know, now than there were 10 years ago. It's a dangerous time for our country.
And, you know, as you mentioned, and I totally agree, and I have Republican friends and I have, you know, people that I know, but it is sort of the dialogue, you know, can be strained when we're really not talking about the same thing. And as you say, you have a conversation and then you get a lot about, well, what about this and what about that? Like, we don't even get halfway through this, and then it becomes a mudslinging thing. Well, this one did that, and what about Hunter Biden's emails and, you know, all these other superfluous
things. Emails, you know, yeah.
You know, and his laptop and things that have nothing to do with the initial conversation that, you know, that we're talking about. And, I was having a conversation with the other day, and it's weird how when you have a general conversation and it shifts a little bit to in the political realm, and you can feel it, and it just sort of just kind of goes sideways. And the comment that was said to me was that, well, you know, the liberals, you know, they hate the Republicans and they hate this. And I'm like, no, there's nobody that I know. I mean, people don't like certain policies, you know, and disagree, but I think there's a perception that there's, you know, that there's hate and